Das ist Vogue Stories, der Podcast von Vogue Deutschland. Meine erste Vogue habe ich vor 15 Jahren in den Händen gehalten. Ich war Babysitterin in Wien. Stundenlang saß ich im Schneidersitz auf dem teuren Designersofa und blätterte durch die Seiten der Vogue, nachdem ich Max ins Bett gebracht hatte. Als kleines, uncooles Mädchen, das so schüchtern war, dass es Menschen teilweise nicht richtig in die Augen schauen konnte, waren die Seiten ein Zufluchtsort. Magisch und weit entfernt. Seit einem Jahr arbeite ich genau an dem Ort, an den ich mich früher nur geflüchtet habe. Mein Team und ich arbeiten fleißig an der Neuausrichtung der Seite. Dabei wundere ich mich oftmals, warum die Vogue eigentlich so ist, wie sie ist. In diesem Jahr wird die deutsche Vogue 40 Jahre alt. Ich möchte hier die Menschen treffen, die Vogue geprägt haben, die Vogue machen und die Vogue sind. Ich möchte die Welt, in die ich mich früher nur geträumt habe, noch besser kennenlernen. Mein Name ist Alexandra Bondi De Antoni. Willkommen bei Vogue Stories.
Vogue should make people dream. That's what it's been for me. It made me dream wanting to belong there, wanting to desire to be a part of this community. And I think that the magazine nowadays are less focused on that.
Ich bin gerade mit dem Zug in Paris angekommen und werde gleich den Designer Herder Ackermann in seinem Studio treffen. Auf dem Weg zu ihm habe ich gemerkt, dass ich komisch nervös bin. Ich bin sehr selten nervös in meinem Leben, aber vor diesem Gespräch habe ich großen Respekt. Herder Ackermann ist ein Designer, der seit Jahren sein eigenes Ding durchzieht und sich keinem Trend beugt. Karl Lagerfeld bezeichnete ihn einmal als den jungen Yves Saint Laurent und nannte ihn als seinen würdigen Nachfolger bei Chanel. In Kolumbien geboren, wurde er als kleiner Junge von einem Kartenmacher adoptiert und reiste mit ihm viel um die Welt. Diese Weltoffenheit und das Fernweh hat er sich bis heute behalten und das sieht man auch in seiner Kleidung. Weil das ja alles Dinge sind, die man über Herder Ackermann schon weiß, soll es in unserem Gespräch genau darum nicht gehen. Ich habe gerade übrigens auch erfahren, dass seine PR-Agentin Michelle, die ja selbst eine Legende in der Modewelt ist, auch beim Gespräch dabei sein wird. Meine Nervosität wird immer größer. Christiane hatte mir erzählt, dass Heiders erstes Vogue-Cover mit Vogue Deutschland war. Das war im Juni 2009 und man sieht Heidi Klum in einem schwarzen asymmetrischen Kleid. Ihre linke Schulter nackt, die rechte bedeckt, in pinker Schrift prangt Heidi bei Vogue auf dem Cover. Wenn ihr euch das auch anschauen wollt, den Link zum Ansehen habe ich euch in die Shownotes gepackt. Nun bin ich aber gespannt, ob sich Heider auch noch an sein erstes Vogue-Cover erinnert.
I did my first picture ever with Nadia.
What were you shooting on her?
A leather shorts, and for the rest she was naked. And she actually didn't want to be because she just had children. And she didn't feel comfortable, so I said, like, could you cover yourself? And we did that shoot, and it went really smooth and fast, and it was the first shoot I ever did.
Did you work with her after that a lot? Was she kind of like
no,
coming back?
No, then we saw each other at Peter Lindbergh's exhibition, and we bumped into each other, and... But it stays for me a very sweet memory.
That's nice. Can you maybe share a story with Christiane with us?
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that you met her?
I remember the first time I saw her. Mm-hmm. It was at a Vogue dinner.
In Paris?
In mm-hmm. Paris. And you know those Vogue dinners, it's there are many people around. And the fashion world is a very loud world. Everybody wants to be there, everybody wants to shine, and everybody wants to stand there. And it was very interesting. I'm always curious about the person who's more discreet in the corner. And you had this very elegant woman in the corner being very discreet and calm and peaceful in between all this hysteria around. And my eyes was drawn to her, not knowing who she was. And I was very intrigued by this very beautiful person who... Yeah, who has a quietness, a calmness around her that you just want to approach her. That's what she reflects to me, at least. She evokes respect to you, you know, as much as she respects you, but she evokes that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Christiane told me, and I'm not really sure if that's true, and she's also not really sure if it's true, but that your first Vogue cover was Vogue Germany.
I think the first Vogue cover was Germany.
And it was a picture of Heidi Klum.
Yeah.
And we have it here, just to, if in case you, do you remember it?
Yes.
And the thing but is...
I think I had two German vocals. I had another one mm-hmm. with Hillary and this one with Heidi Klum, yeah.
What she told me about that she requested this asymmetric dress, mm-hmm. but the PR sent her the wrong dress, so she just cut the sleeve off. Did you know that already?
Damn it! no, I was not aware of this. This is good to know. That's why I never got my dress back.
Yeah, she didn't know if you knew, so she said I should like ask you about it.
What those stylists can do, seriously. So I was aware of the Heidi Klum. You know, it's always very flattering when you have a cover of the Vogue. Mm-hmm. I mean, from whatever country it is. And yeah, Christiane was absolutely the first one to lay her eyes on us and to give us this honor.
So that cover happened, I think, in 2009. Mm-hmm. What changed since then?
Well, I'm still here today. That's quite a big change. No, but seriously, what changed? I don't know. We try to evolve. We continue the little road that we took. Mm-hmm. I think with the time I got more mature, certainly. And
can you explain what more mature means as a designer?
I don't even know what maturity means in general. So that's a bit difficult. But no, but it means that, you know, since we started with a women's collection and then we got seduced to the men, so mm-hmm. that came along. And now there's rhythm in fashion, which is faster, so there's a pre-collection. So, yeah, the whole system evolves and you have to play the game or to be a part of it as if you want to. So you have to take that role too.
How did the role in your eye of the designer change in the last 10 years? Because, yeah, that was 10 years
ago. Yeah, but I don't think that my eye really much changed. I'm quite a bore in that sense. That I'm one of those designers who are just following whatever road they took. I'm not one of those designers who can challenge us every season. I belong more to the generation that has just one story to tell, and every it's a book, and every collection is a new chapter. And it stays, you just evaluate from one collection to the other. You take your mistakes and you try to make them grow. So, yeah, it's always the same sensibility. Mm-hmm. I'm quite faithful in that.
You just talked about the story that you're telling, and I moved houses on the weekend and I randomly found an issue of A magazine, mm-hmm. the one that you created mm-hmm. in like ages ago, I think 2005, 2004. Yes. Yeah. And what struck me on that issue was that it's all about your work and your vision, but you don't really see you as a person in there. It's like all the people that you work with, your collaborators. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking about like the world that you are creating with your shows and with your collections. And what you just said, that your story is kind of the same, but can you maybe also elaborate, like, where did it all start and what happened that we're at the place that we're at now?
Yeah, but when you talk back about the A magazine, for instance, it was really a beautiful project to do. And what's interesting sometimes is that we designers are put so much up front. And I thought it was very interesting to put the people that inspires me up front, because they are the reason why I'm doing this job, or they are the reason why I'm involved, or they are the reason why I'm still here today, because I need to feed my eyes every day with something, and it's with each of them. So I think sometimes it's really important to put the other ones up there instead of having, in this world where it's all very egomaniac, to only talk about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, each of them has something to tell, but if you count everything all together, it's just me at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It's my sensibility.
Can you explain that sensibility a little bit more?
To explain my sensibility? Mm-hmm. I would not know what it is. You know, it's just a continuous search. You're searching for yourself, and it's something very... It's very psychological, because you're just in search of who you are, or what you are, or what you are drawn to, or what excites you or turns you off or makes you happy and makes you sad. And it's very related to your private life. It's all mm-hmm. one connection. It's all very close to each other. So it's, I don't know what my sensibility is. It's just that I'm in search of myself, or in search mm-hmm. for something at least, or escaping myself as well at the same time.
What was the last thing that you escaped from?
To get into your work, it's also a way to escape yourself. You know, I do believe that whether you're a writer or whether you're a singer or any creative job. It's a kind of way to not wanting to deal with your life, so you escape into a kind of imagination of somewhere where you would like to belong. Like at the beginning, I remember the men's collection that I did, I had all those young men full of tattoos, and they had the most beautiful tattoos drawn on them. It was like a diary. Mm-hmm. It was like really like poem to themselves. And deep inside, I would have loved to be that kind of person and to have loved to have this biography on myself. So it's always a project, what you would like to be or what you would not like to be or what you desire.
And maybe also where you want to go or...
Oh, where you want to go.
We talked about like how your work changed since in the last 10 years. How do you see the role of fashion magazines changing? Because we now, I think a birthday is always a good moment to evaluate where you stand and where you're coming from and where you're going. So where would you say fashion magazines in general and then also Vogue is going to?
I don't know where it leads to, but what I can tell you is like the other day I was cleaning up my things and I entered those boxes full of magazines that I had due to all my travels taken along with me. And the fact that you can look back at those magazines, that you can feel the paper, that you can touch, and it's a little bit more yellow, and it's a little bit more faded, and everything, and you want to rip that paper and put it against your wall. And that's something which is so physical and so touchable, nothing can ever replace that. Mm-hmm. Whatever technology we're going to, there's something very human, and just the sound of the paper, just... the feeling that you remember exactly the moment when you bought that magazine or you opened that page because it was this person in it or whatsoever is something which is very moving. And it throws you back to times and it throws you back to moments and periods of your life. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're looking at our phone and every image is so fast and we delete so fast that we will never be connected to a moment. It will never be a kind of souvenir. Mm-hmm. Well, a magazine is, and you treasure it, and you take it along with you. But you know, the Vogue has always been a part of it. So there's not a specific moment that I remember because it's been always existing around me. So it's a part of my environment.
Mm-hmm. So you have been working on your own label for quite some time, and you've been allegedly also really been approached by a lot of big labels to work with them, but never really took the job. How do you know if something is right and something is wrong? And how do you make big decisions like that?
Well, you obviously never know whether it's right or wrong, but you know whether you have to take that road. And yes, I have any proposition, but you know, the proposition has something to be that disturbs me, that I do not understand why this person is thinking of me. And where I have the feeling that I could challenge myself and take another road, because sometimes you have your repertoire and you know your stories, but perhaps you have something else to tell that you can't fit into your story. So to take that other road, it needs to be challenging. It needs to be something that is not in the first degree. Mm-hmm. So that's why many projects I've been refusing, because I did it, I'm not feeling that my sensibility would fit to it, because you have to understand that you have to add something to the brand. If not, it doesn't make any sense. That doesn't interest me, at least. So if I can add something, or it challenges me, if it disturbs me, yeah, then it attracts my curiosity.
Can you tell us what the last thing was that disturbed you?
That's a very personal question. There's a totally different answer. The last thing that disturbed me, then I would have to go very private, which okay. I would keep. No, but you understand that if you take another challenge, then what your story is, it needs to be something that off your road.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of role does perfection play for you in your design work?
It's a search. It's a search for perfection, but perfection is only beautiful when it's incomplete, because otherwise it would be such a bore. So the road to take is interesting. To arrive there must be a bore.
Do you think that you ever reach perfection in any piece that you did or in anything?
Otherwise I would not do it any longer, I think, because then there's no search for it. Yeah.
You talked about before that how quick everything is today. And do you think that with social media and the internet and everything, it's harder today to stick to yourself and to believe in yourself? Or did that change for you personally?
I think to stick to your guns nowadays, it's really, really hard because you are so confronted with what the outside world does and the judgments about it. And nowadays, everybody is free to give a judgment, which I totally disagree with, because not everybody should be entitled to give their opinion, at least publicly. So yeah, it's very hard to stick to your gun because you're very, all those images and everything that's happening around you, it can make you insecure. And I'm talking about, certainly for the young generations of kids of 14, 15, to grow up with all what's happening in social media and to try to stand there on your own and try to be the person that you would like to be, you need to have very strong shoulders. So yes, I find it very, the social media, it's an interesting approach, but it's also, there's lots of anxiety around it, I find. We can deal with it because I have a certain age, so I know where more or less where I'm standing. But I'm just very anxious for the future generation, how they're going to handle it. Because it makes you insecure, doubtful about yourself. Because everyone projects a life which is not necessarily theirs, but what their dream is. The opposite, the person in front of it, thinks that he doesn't have this all. So,
how do you deal with insecurities? Or do you ever feel insecure when you look for your Instagram? Do you have that moment still, even though you...
Oh, I don't feel insecure to my Instagram. That's no, I'm quite detached to this. But yeah,
To your Instagram, or
I am detached to it. I'm not very emotionally attached to it, like kids can be, or like some other people can be. But I've certainly had my insecurities. But insecurities also, it's a very good thing, because it helps you also to move forwards. Mm-hmm. I think that everyone sees insecurities or when you're doubtful as a negative thing, although I see something very positive, because it's drive, you know. Then you know that, or you're not sure what you're going to do, so you're going to push yourself even further. Mm-hmm. So I see it more as something quite optimistic in my way.
Mm-hmm. Talking about that as well, I'm coming maybe from insecurities. How do you deal with failure?
Badly. Failure with work, you can always... I think failure for relationship is much more difficult than any other failures.
Mm-hmm. And in work, do you...
In work, you learn to deal with it. I mean, you have to. There's no other way anyway. I have been lucky that so far the press has been very kind to me. So I'm lucky on that. But you took that road, so you can't get off of it. Mm-hmm. So you just have to stand straight, go for it, and continue. Mm-hmm.
Because life is so quick, people get more and more attached to routines and like having a straight line of how they do things. Do you have something like that? Do you have routines in your work or your private life or in your day? Do you have any things that...
I do.
I
also, because rhythm is so fast that sometimes you just sit to... You need to... Perfectly. I just need to have the same habits every morning. I just need to eat in the same restaurants. And when I go abroad, I like to stay in the same hotels. It's just a way to calm down everything. Mm. It's just to have peace of mind and just to be able to breathe for the moment that you can, because you know that the day is going to take you away with all the worries and the things that you have to do. Yeah.
Can you walk us through your typical day? So how does a day in Heide Ackermann's life look like?
Oh, so boring. No, it's not interesting. What my day is not... I don't think it's interesting what my day... is for public, or how I wake up and if I have my grapefruit. No, so that's not interesting how my day is.
Okay.
It's long days. That's all I can say.
You've been traveling, since a kid you've been traveling a lot, and now with your work, I'm sure it took you to like the craziest places. Is there, when you travel, is this far away thing something that excites you, or are there also moments that are a little bit frightening?
No, the further I could go away, the more it excites me and the more I come to peace with myself. Because when you go to places which are where you have the feeling that time is standing still, whether you would go to Bhutan or to Ethiopia or to those places, you totally somewhere connect even more with yourself. The fact that you are far away from your home makes you closer to home, because those are the moments of silence that you think about your worries, about your problem, about what attracts you, what you desire, and you really have the time to think. You have the time to stand still, which is a luxury. So that luxury makes you feel much closer home than when you simply are at home.
Can you maybe tell us the last time that you did a trip like that and that you had the time to like go into yourself?
The last big trip that I did, which really inspired me, was when I was up in the cloud in Bhutan. Yeah, because you are there and you're there with just the same people, the same group of friends that you've been traveling for the past 12 years with, and your iPhone does not work, and you're up in the clouds and you have nothing to look around than trees and joyful faces. So you're just more focused on yourself. Mm-hmm. You are very close to yourself, and which is something that we don't have in daily life. I'm not close to myself. I just make my day as much as I can, and I try to do the best what I can in my day, but it's not that I'm close to myself in those moments.
How long are you able to keep that feeling with yourself after you come back?
Oh, Nasunya, the minute you land, done. No, it's true. It's not something that you would like to keep it, but you can't keep it because, of course, everything is thrown back in your face. But at the same time, it's excellent because otherwise you would not treasure those moments as much. Mm. So I don't mind to go back to reality. And I think reality is nice. But I just, I think it's interesting, yeah.
Do you have any trip planned in the near future to escape, or is it?
Yeah, we will be on our way to Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. We're the same gang, so yeah.
Nice.
But it's again, places where you can observe and you can look at people and you can, time is standing still.
Maybe also you're outside your comfort zone or
you're... Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, no, which is not outside your comfort zone, because for me, it is my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Due to my nomadic life as a mm-hmm. child, where we were in the desert and all those places, so for me, it feels much more closer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Imagine that you've been gone from this earth for like 10 or 15 years. Where will
You give me only 10 more years? Oh, good Lord.
Or like 25.
30, thank you.
30, insert a random number here. Mm. Where do you think that we will be able to find traces of you still in this world?
I don't think it's interesting to find any trace of mine. I don't, it's not something that doesn't intrigue me or interest me, or I don't think that I'm that talented that I should be one of the designers who you would find traces of. Mm-hmm. I just try to do my job as best as I can. Mm-hmm. But to think about after me, no, there's no necessity to it.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think that Vogue will go in the next 30 years? And do you have maybe an advice of what we at Vogue should do right now to consider where to go?
Well, what I think that the Vogue is responsible also. Vogue should make people dream. And that's also what a magazine's about. That's what it's been for me. When I was a kid, or when I have still this magazine, it made me dream, wanting to belong there, wanting to desire to be a part of this community. And that's very important. And I think that the magazine nowadays are less focused on that. But there are generations to come who, it's our job to make them dream. It's our job to make them believe. And it's our job to seduce them with this. Mm. And I think as long as we can give this to them, then you succeed. Because one kid's little dream can be a big master in a few years from now.
Why do you think that magazines lost track of that?
I don't know if they lost track of that. But
you just said that.
I said it because I think the magazine now, it's everything is focused on sales. Everything is focused on different things. Mm-hmm. But it's like a business. Everything starts from a dream. Everything. So you can have you can work for a big group, big luxury house, and we can talk about figures, which is really important. But one should not forget that everything comes from one little person who just had a little dream. Mm.
What was your dream when you started?
I was dreaming to be in the ID magazine. If I would have one parution in a magazine, I was already happy. I never thought that I would stand where I'm standing today, so it's it's only a blessing for me. And the way you go along, the way your dreams are becoming. bigger.
Do you have a dream right now that you want to share with us?
I still have so many dreams that I will not share with you.
Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome.
Ich hoffe, euch hat das Gespräch genauso gut gefallen wie mir. Abonniert den Podcast doch jetzt auf Spotify, Apple, Deezer oder Soundcloud. Schreibt mir gern an onlineredaktion@vogue.de und erzählt mir eure Vogue-Stories oder schreibt mir eure Gästewünsche. Auf vogue.de findet ihr jetzt mehr zum Thema. Ich freue mich, von euch zu hören. Der Podcast wurde produziert von Mit Vergnügen. Ich bin Alexandra Bondi-D'Antoni. Ciao, Baba, und bis zum nächsten Mal.